Well, we got an announcement only today, as we've been joined by Fazia Mohammed, that we're just about to go to Bangladesh. I know WIPA, they've had some concerns about that trip, but the Cricket West Indies and WIPA are talking, and it looks as if the side would, in fact, be going to Bangladesh. And we need to speak to a man who went to Bangladesh, of course, my very good friend, Dr. Man Singh. Hello, Doctor. How are you this evening? I assume you're in Jamaica.
Good evening, and good evening to the listeners, viewers, and all around.
All right, good. Now, talk to us about your trip in Bangladesh. Did you buy some land as well?
No, in fact, that was the whole point, that it was to assess a biosecure bubble, and secure we were. So there was no moving on. But listen, the trip, as the CEO has explained to you, that there's a lot of negotiating that takes place before you go on tours. And in this day and age with COVID, the protocols obviously are different and individualized to every country. We know Bangladesh, 170 million people, densely populated and so on, has a lot of COVID. But the issue is how strong and how robust is their biosecure plan. And by sending a team, I think Cricket West Indies was just making absolutely sure that what was suggested and what was promoted is actually what's going to be enacted. And between Paulso and myself, I think we went there and we're quite happy with what we saw.
Mm-hmm. Doc, any questions for Dr. Man Singh, who went to Bangladesh?
Hi, Dr. Man Singh. You've explained the question as to why we made the tour to Bangladesh rather than to the UK and to New Zealand. But with your stated fact of the amount of COVID in Bangladesh, are you certain you can ensure the safety of the players as they transition through the airport and then through Bangladesh to get to their the place where they will quarantine? From Bangladesh?
Sure, I'm glad you mentioned the other bubbles that we'd had, because of course when we toured England was one of the most infected countries in the world with the highest rate of infection. So, but the conditions were different in that what we had in England was what was called a contained bubble, where everything was contained within a ground. The hotel was there, the playing ground was there, the gym facilities were there. We were even transported by chartered planes because, of course, there was no commercial flight from the Caribbean going that way, at least not regularly. And then we moved to another contained site, and that was the English tour. And yet the integrity of a bubble is dependent on the discipline of everybody in the bubble. And even with that scenario, we saw where Jofra Archer was able to slip out and had to sort of be reintegrated. We heard where Mohammed Hafeez in the next bubble when Pakistan were there, interacted with somebody on a golf course and had to be reintegrated. So, the integrity of the bubble is not just the plan, but in everybody playing their part. Now, to answer your specific question, which has to do with air travel, the rate of transmission in air travel right now is actually extremely low. And that's because of two or three things. Obviously, not that many people are traveling right now. Number two, there are a lot of precautions that are taking place. For example, on our own flight, when we're going there, you cannot enter that side of the world without having negative COVID tests. So even though you could get into the USA without a COVID test, you're not going to get on that plane unless you showed a COVID test within 72 hours. And with that, it was important, because you then have the confidence that everybody who's on that flight with you has a negative test. Number two, everybody has to wear a mask. Everybody is given disinfectant and so on, and you're obviously spaced as well. But the airlines are very quick to mention, and they did so on the flight, that they have HEPA filters which filter out 99.97% of viruses, and that their system replenish the air every 2 to 3 minutes. So every 2 to 3 minutes, you're breathing new air. So they're trying to do their bit as well. Having said that, I also, on other flights, they actually would give you face masks. They'd state that if there's anybody sitting in a middle seat, they have to wear the suit that was provided to them, a PPE suit, which is not what's happening on this side of the world. So the travel restrictions or the travel precautions are quite careful, and those are the same that we use when we went to New Zealand. But to say that it's 100% foolproof, well, obviously no bubble is and no scenario is, but we're trying to do that. Now, once we get to Bangladesh, we have separate exit areas from which we'll go into VIP lounges, and we'll be treated completely isolated from the general population. And from there on in, we're in our bubble.
Doctor, I want to interrupt because I know that CEO Johnny Graves, he's got to leave us very soon. So just hold your question. Just going to come back to Johnny because I know he's got to go and prepare for Christmas and make sure he gets his gifts and all that for his kids. But Johnny, just before you go, when can we expect the West Indies team going off to Bangladesh? Will there be any staff cuts going to Bangladesh? And I also want you to explain this thing with Dowridge. Dowridge came home for personal reasons, and I'm not sure that there was a press release from Cricket West Indies explaining to us exactly what happened to Dowridge. Our understanding is that he had an injury. So could you explain the Dowridge thing for us and also tell us about the team in terms of the personnel and where you expected to get the team going to Bangladesh, and then you can go.
Thank you, Andrew. I'll do that in reverse order, if I may. So okay, in terms sure. of okay. the next step, as Dr. Mansingh outlined, we're in the final discussions and negotiations with the BCB, the Bangladesh Cricket Board, mm-hmm. on the tour MOU that will contain all of the safety, security and medical protocols, as well as the standard logistics and operations. And we've already cut the tour down significantly by reducing a test match, removing the T20 internationals, and just having those all-important ODIs, which are part of the qualification process now for the next World Cup and the Test Championship Test matches. We're also leaving the region a week later so players can get, mm-hmm. hopefully, longer at time with their friends and family and loved ones over the Christmas period to rest and have a break from cricket. In terms of the personnel, the board have already agreed with the recommendations that management and the Medical Advisory Committee met, which is we will travel with the team doctor to Bangladesh. We'll also travel with a team psychologist like we did for the UK tour. And sort of with the abundance of caution, we'll also travel with Paul Slow, who will act as our safety, security and compliance officer to make sure that every aspect of that biosecure plan that Dr. Mansingh and Paul Slow saw in action in Bangladesh last week will be implemented. So we'll be doing everything we possibly can to continue to reduce the risk and to keep the players and the team management unit together and safe. So it all being well, we'll conclude our discussions with the Bangladesh Cricket Board over the next few days. And when the team and selection panel are back from New Zealand, I'd expect that this time next week we'll be announcing a test and an ODI squad and the travelling party that will go to Bangladesh in the early part of next year.
How many players are you how many players are you expecting to take before you go on to Shane Dowridge? How many players are you expected to take?
I think approximately. I mean, I expect a test squad of 15 players, which is the norm.
Right.
I expect an ODI squad of a similar amount, and therefore, with some no doubt crossover between the two squads, maybe 24, 25 players, along with the team management unit of maybe slightly more than we normally travel with, maybe 12 to 13 team management.
And reserves as well?
No, I don't think we'll be travelling with reserves to Bangladesh. It's a shorter tour, and we've also got the ODI players there. Should we need to extend anyone's stay if there were injuries or significant injuries to any of the players through the one-day series or as we prepare for the test matches.
Mm-hmm. Shane Dowridge.
In terms of Shane Dowridge, he picked up a finger injury in the test match in Hamilton, and then made a request to return to the Caribbean and for personal reasons. And obviously, we had Kemal Roach, who was returning to Barbados, obviously on that sad news of the passing of his father. And Shane came back with Kemal on his request. And you know, these times when we do get players' requests to return home for personal reasons, we obviously respect that, and we'll be in constant contact with Shane to give him all the support that he needs to get back to playing cricket whenever he feels he's ready to do so.
Fazir Mohammed has joined us as a journalist. Fazir, are you happy with that answer? Good evening to you, Fazir.
Well, good evening, all. I understand the delicate situation that Johnny and Cricket West Indies will face, because if a player says personal reasons, you don't want to be seen to be prying into someone's personal life, because we all know how insensitive that could appear. But And of course, it might be the cumulative effect of all these COVID bubbles and being away from home, results not going your way, you're struggling for form. So it might be a combination of things. But I suppose it's something that Johnny and everyone else at Cricket West Indies are going to have to manage very carefully, because you don't want a situation to start to develop where players are dropping out of campaigns for personal reasons, because then it will appear that it's a situation where, not to suggest that by any stretch of the imagination that Dorwich might have done it conveniently, but you certainly have that, and I suppose that's why you need to have, whether it's your team psychologist or whoever else, or your team manager, constantly liaising with the players, getting the feedback to properly understand what is their mindset. Because if someone isn't happy for whatever reason, Andrew, it's no point having someone there who doesn't want to be there. I know there are contractual obligations and so on, and you can't just simply let's hope that, in other words, we don't have a situation with Renato Morton, where he invented the death of his grandmother so he could come home, basically.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, it's just a very conservative press release coming from the board in relation to Shane Dowridge. You know, it's a little strange, because Dowridge, you remember, didn't get a substitute as well, did he?
You can't get substitutes, Andrew, at the moment for injuries. Okay. Substitutes are only there under COVID.
So what
COVID
about the concussion then? Rule.
Yeah, but that Shane Dowridge didn't have a concussion.
So explain. Explain exactly what happened to him in relation to the injury.
Well, the concussion regulations are quite clear. Completely different subject. If a player has concussion during a test match, then they're ruled out, and Dr. Manson can speak about this for a mandatory period, and they're assessed by the medical staff. And under those circumstances, you are allowed to choose a replacement. Under the concussion replacement rules. Okay, but Shane Dowridge didn't have concussion.
Shane Dowridge could not have gotten a replacement.
No, he wasn't concussed, Andrew. Okay. As I said, he had a finger injury, and then he gave a request through team management to return home to Barbados for personal reasons. Okay. And as Fazir acknowledges, when any player asks to come home for personal reasons, your initial reaction is to respect them, to give them the support and privacy that they deserve. And we, as Fazir rightly acknowledges, through our team psychologists and through the medical staff and team management, we'll be giving Shane all the support he needs. And when the time is right, working with the Barbados Cricket Association to get Shane back playing cricket.
All right. Well, I want to thank you. I don't know if Fazir or Dr. Ford, any final quick question for my good friend Johnny Grave, who's got to go off? No, nobody. Okay.
But nothing from me.
Johnny, I want to thank you very much indeed. It's always a pleasure. Happy Christmas to you. And you're now coming up to 4 years in the job, huh? You were there since 2017. Is that right? Came to the Caribbean in 2017, Johnny.
Well, Your listeners won't be able to see what little hair I have left and how grey it is, what is left. But yes
indeed.
It'll be four years early in the early part.
And I want to congratulate you, because Fazir just sent me a note to tell me that your contract has been renewed and you're going to be with us possibly for another 2 years or so. Is that right? Can you confirm that?
Yeah, my contract now expires in, I think, June the 30th, 2023, which... seems a lifetime away. So I will continue to enjoy the role and as you say, enjoy a Caribbean Christmas. And I wish you, the guest, and all the listeners a very happy Christmas and all the best for the new year. And as I said earlier, we hope that we will bring a huge amount of cricket to the Caribbean from February onwards. And obviously what we all hope as West Indies cricket fans are much improved results, not just from our men's team, but also our women's team under the new leadership of Courtney Walsh. So, and we'll continue to be working hard on all of these transformational plans, because of, as I said before, it's the system that we operate in that needs to be improved and needs to become world class. And every aspect of West Indies cricket needs to improve if we are to get consistent results from our men's and women's team home and away.
All right, Johnny, thanks. Merry Christmas to you. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks, Andrew.
Good evening. Right, good. Well done there. Well, Fazer, you didn't know that Johnny's contract was extended to 2023. So you learned something amazing, I guess, this evening. You can put it in your article. Yes, the board has got the confidence in Johnny and Johnny's, and the pay is quite good, you know. So we want to thank him for staying with us. There was some talk that he might have been going other places, but he's going to be staying with us here in the Caribbean. Well, let's go back, of course, to our very good friend, Ian Bradshaw. Ian, we want to get into some of the specifics. In your opening remarks, you talked about the fact that you were unhappy, but were there any positives coming out of New Zealand as far as you're concerned?
Well, Andrew, there's always positives with West Indies cricket, and there's always a bright spark to inspire us cricket fans. And as was mentioned by Garfield, seeing the guys on their debut stepping up to the challenge, and they showed that they had the attributes to be successful at international level if they continue to work hard at their game. I was very pleased with how the silver cap looked very tidy behind the stumps. Mm-hmm. And then when he got a chance to bat, was very impressed with his certainty in short play. I think that's one of the things that some of the other batsmen did not show in terms of the willingness to go forward or transfer the weight back with a level of certainty. So it was good to see that. And maybe sometimes, Andrew, when you have guys that's not carrying baggage, they can approach these challenges with a fresh mind. With the case of Shamar, he too looked well in his first outing. I don't think that he would have played in New Zealand before and those type of conditions. Mm-hmm. And he did show what we knew he did have here in the Caribbean, a deceptive set of speed. Mm-hmm. And a cricket awareness to try to set up batsmen. Yes, he's still young in the game, his first match, and he will learn from the experience. His patience and his consistency will have to improve. But it was good to have this young man in. And the challenge for West Indies cricket will be how we find opportunities for him and Alzari to develop them, because they are both very, very young. And we'll have to find the opportunities for them to improve.
Now, should the position, and I'll start with you, Fizzy, on this. Phil Wallace was making the point last week that he felt that after these dismal performances that we may have to look at our coaching staff. Do you think that the position of Mr. Simmons and his staff should be reviewed, or you don't think it's going to make a difference, Fazir?
I don't think it's going to make a difference because, I heard a bit of what Fellow said. He didn't say, and you're quite correct, he didn't say that they have to be replaced, but their performances have to be reviewed, which I think any professional organization will do so. But if you're going to go on the basis of firing your coach or your technical team after every disappointing series, West Indies will be doing that at least twice a year.
Oh dear!
if you look at the track record of the West Indies, so there are bigger issues to this situation than just simply replacing your coach or sacking a few players or firing your technical team. Because again, and I mean, Brady was there in 2006 when the West Indies lost in Auckland by just 26 runs. That was probably the last time we came really close to beating New Zealand in New Zealand. Since then, we've lost 2-0 in 2013, saved by the rain and Bravo's double hundred in 2013 from it being 3-0. In 2017, we lost 2-0, one by an innings, one by over 200 runs. This time around, we've lost two by an innings, both inside 4 days. So really, it is nothing substantially different from what would have happened with previous coaches, previous technical teams. So yes, there must be a review. There will always have to be a review of a number of different elements. Mm. But to suggest that just simply sacking Simmons or sacking anybody else is going to really bring about a measurable difference, that wouldn't make any sense. Mm.
Your assessment of Jason Holder's captaincy, Fazir?
I think he's reached a point where it could be he's jaded or maybe a bit of fatigue, a number of different elements to it. We have to still remember he's only 28 years of age. But the fact of the matter is his bowling isn't as effective as it would have been. Because remember, over the last couple of years, he's been really outstanding with the ball, taking wickets at a rate of 27 runs per wicket, which is, in the West Indies context, extremely good. And the only one better would be Kim Aroach. So the fact that he went through this series without any success is a cause for concern. Is it fatigue? And it's also interesting that with all the talk about fatigue and wanting to get home for Christmas, he's gone off to Australia for the Big Bash League. And yes, he more or less explained that, look, our revenues have been reduced, pay has been cut in half, they need to earn a living. So it's all part of the challenges of the professional game in the context of the modern requirements and COVID-19. So I don't see any need to entertain a discussion about replacing Jason Holder as captain because of the fact that what has happened in New Zealand was going to happen anyway, with or without Jason Holder, with or without any player you can name. The West Indies were going to lose and lose badly in New Zealand for a number of factors that don't have much to do with the individual players.
Just before Dr. Ford comes in to continue his little chat with Dr. Man Singh, let's go back to Ian Bradshaw. Ian, in terms of the coaching staff and, of course, Jason Holder, would you consider making changes? Let's start with Holder. Would you continue with Holder as captain?
Yes, I would continue with Jason. At this time, we've now replaced him as he's no longer in charge of the T20 and the One Day team. So he's just the test captain. I do agree with Fazir that his performances with the ball has been disappointing. But I believe that what tends to happen, as with West Indies cricket, we've grown accustomed to bowling with the juke ball, and every tour that we have to go and we bowl with the kookaburra ball, we seem to struggle. So strategically, I think that we have to see if our preparation with the kookaburra ball needs to be improved. I can see his frustration, Jason, and he's been very careful in his presentation to the public, as yes, he has to be. But I'm hoping that behind closed doors, he is a little bit more honest and frank with his players, because that honesty is what is going to be important as we go forward. And I know his job is a challenging one, but I'm liking the fact that he's not trying to make excuses for the fact that the team is not performing. And he himself will know that as captain, his job will be doubly challenging, because he has to inspire as well. And like all West Indies captains, we like our captains to lead from the front. And his performances will be measured a lot harder. As it relates to his workload and going to Australia, is a reality of the times. Persons have opportunities, they have limited careers, and players want to maximize those opportunities. What they do not want to hear, and I would hope that Jason will not fall in this category, where he comes back and complains of being tired. Because yes, you can go off make your money, but be a professional and be ready when the bell calls for West Indies cricket.
Yes, because you're going to have a situation where he's going to be good at the Big Bash and he's going to literally just change clothes and go to Bangladesh. Not much time to rest. Let's go back to Dr.
As it relates to the coaching staff.
Yes.
You wanted me to speak about the coaching staff.
Yeah, sure. Fine.
The coaching staff quite rarely has to be assessed, and they will come back and do their debriefing. But my concern is, how often does the coaching staff work with the players? You really can't do much to improve players when they get on tour. Maybe we've been fortunate, we've had these extended tours, but it's going to be important that the coaching staff is available. To work with the players consistently. I know the realities of being in separate countries isn't the same as in like India, Australia, where these teams can tend to assemble at one place and train for an extended period of time. But there are realities, and our coaching staff really will be judged by the work that they do outside of tours to prepare our teams far better, because our deficiencies are far greater.
Ian, would you make any changes at all? Would you fire anyone? in terms of the coaching staff?
No, I really could not say I would fire anyone, but what I would like to see is the involvement of some of our great players. Are we going to let some of the greatest players who have played this game not have a greater role in West Indies cricket? I'm not asking for them to be in the bio secure environments, because all of them may not have had the desire to be in that. But have we as a West Indies community embrace Gordon Greenidge's, Desmond Haynes, that great opening pair? Where does Sir Vivian Richards and Brian Lara fall in the development of young batsmen? We cannot be satisfied not to have a better blueprint of creating a test batsman that can average 40 at least. You know, we as a people who've excelled, we must be able to develop at least one or two players who can average 40. And I believe that a lot of it has to do with the lack of involvement of our greatest players.
All right. Dr. Man Singh, any concerns? I know that Weeper, they've had their concerns, but yes, you've been to Bangladesh. You've given us a pretty good report. But is there anything that is maybe just slightly worrying you about Bangladesh? Are you quite happy, 100% happy, Doctor?
Well, I think to start off with, we've got to ensure, we have got to realize that no biosecure bubble is 100% safe. You just, that's not it. What biosecure bubbles do is minimize the risk. And the other thing to appreciate is that every country has to do it pertinent to what their condition is. So whereas we say that the West Indian players have been in bubble after bubble, the truth is they've only been in one bubble as a West Indies team, because the CPL was a franchise, IPL was a franchise. And in New Zealand, we weren't really in a bubble. We were in quarantine for 2 weeks. And after that, we walked into a society which is COVID-free and were able to behave just like we behave on any tour pre-COVID. So what's happening is for them to switch from that back into a bubble scenario. Now, one of the pleasing things about going to Bangladesh is that the Bangladesh Cricket Board had made it clear that their players only earn by playing cricket, and therefore they need to play cricket. And so they've actually held three domestic competitions. And the latest one is actually going on right now with five franchise teams. And they're being housed, and the whole competition is going forward in a bubble, akin to what we'll be doing when we go to Bangladesh. So it's not that we went to see what could happen. We actually saw the bubble in action, and we saw all the components of it, and we were able to advise them and to talk to them about aspects that we thought could be improved and so on, and they were very receptive. But the pleasing thing about it was that we saw everything in action, and we saw that the plans that they have for Chattogram, because this competition is taking place in Dhaka, are probably going to fall in line with what we saw there. So we're very happy with not only being there and seeing the facilities, but actually seeing the bubble in action. And with that, I have a lot more confidence that things should be okay. But as I told you before, it depends on the integrity and the responsibility of people in the bubble. And that's a lot of people.
Doc, any questions for your fellow doc? Further questions?